Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Modo Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Modo Casino, the only app worth your time.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details.
Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
And a good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Looks like it's going to be hopefully another beautiful day. It'll get a little rain, I think, late morning, early afternoon, and then it's going to move out, go east. And man, I don't know if anybody's looked at Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but wow, at least looking at it today, what, low 80s, maybe mid 80s, no chance of rain. Looks like some nice weather ahead, which will be much welcomed, although we've had a little bit of that in the last week or so. Darren McFarland, that's me down here in Rutherford County. In Smyrna, Willie Donick is over in East Nashville. Chase McCabe on the west side in Bellevue, and Marquise Munson holding things down at our Wholesale Inc. Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. So, as we continue to talk about return to play, it is official. MLS is returning to play in July down in Orlando, and it's going to be a little World Cup style. Maybe, Willie, this will bring back memories of us actually attempting, or at least me, I won't throw you in the category, at least me trying to attempt to talk about World Cup soccer. But, yes, there was a time and a place in this market when we used to do that on a regular basis.
I love the World Cup. I think the first time we did it, Darren, was 2002. That's how far back we did our World Cup coverage on a weekly basis. If you remember those days, I mean,
yes.
And you talk about starting from scratch. I think the first time I really focused in on a World Cup was 98, and I realized, hey, this is pretty good. Like I don't think I paid hardly any attention in my life up until then. And then by the time 2002 came around, we were like, hey, let's try this, you know. And we started off with very little knowledge, but we brought some people in that did know some things. And so here we are, you know, about a generation later, where we have our own team, and they were going to have to get creative, just like all the leagues, to figure out how to crown a champion. And they've been through a lot with their labor situation and, you know, think about Nashville SC. On top of all of the pandemic and the virus, they had a tornado, and you know, they're just getting started. It has been a really big set of challenges for them. And so now this is exciting news, and we'll have a chance to talk to Gary Smith about this at 11 o'clock. And I think we're going to be the first people to have a chance to have a conversation with the coach who has been setting the table with, you know, this group. He got a chance to coach the team last year in the USL, and now here he is in his first year in the MLS, and this is the challenge ahead. They switch over to the Eastern Conference. They'll have to win some games in the pool to advance and get into the playoffs. But you never know. I think this is the thing that is exciting to me, is when you're kind of the underdog. We've seen it in the World Cup, right? There's always a team that puts together a couple of great games, maybe pulls a big upset, and the next thing you know, you're in the playoffs.
The big thing for me on this – the big thing for me on this format, because it's like a World Cup, you know, and I just identify myself, you know, I'm not a huge soccer fan. I'm learning about it because the team is in our city now. This gives me a chance to learn about the rest of the league, because it's a made-for-TV type tournament. They're not going to have fans all there together, three games a day. And so for somebody like me that's trying to learn more about the sport, you know, I'll tune in for that reason alone. Also, of course, keeping up with Nashville SC and learning more about that team. So it goes back to our conversation with NASCAR or UFC or any of these sports that are starting to come back. It gets new eyeballs on your sport. So I think the format is going to be a lot of fun starting July 8th.
So this is some key dates for the MLS. So in a couple of weeks, 2 weeks exactly from today, teams will arrive in Orlando. And then on July 8th, group stage will begin. There's going to be 26 teams involved in this. July 25th through the 28th will be the round of 16. Late July, early August will be the quarterfinals. August 5th through the 6th will be semifinals. And August 11th MLS is back, their tournament final on August the 11th. So pretty interesting how this league decided to tackle their season in a return to play. As mentioned, Gary Smith, first interview you'll hear from him since this news came out, and that will be at 11 o'clock today, Nashville SC head coach. So you're going to want to hear this. Also, Don Garber was on Golic and Wingo this morning, and this is what the ML commissioner had to say.
You know, if you guys remember the World Cup back in 94, there was a 24-team World Cup, and obviously it's gotten a lot bigger. But that format would be, our format's identical, 54 games. All 26 of our teams will be down there. They'll be staying in the Swan and Dolphin Hotels, which is on the Disney property. They'll be playing their games on the soccer fields at the ESPN Wide World of Sports. We'll start with group matches, no different than a World Cup tournament. Each club will play three of them. They'll count to the regular season. Those winners go into a round of 16, and then a quarterfinal, semifinal, and final. And we'll have prize money up to $1 million for our clubs that go through the round. So they'll be playing for some money, as well as a what we call a Champions League spot in a regional tournament that FIFA runs here in this region. So a very meaningful tournament. And then hopefully when this is tournament is over in mid-August, our clubs will be able to get back into their markets. And to the extent that we're permitted by local authorities, we can get back into our stadiums and play.
There you go. So that's how they're going to – their return to play is going to take place, and all this will begin on July 8th. So are we giving it a thumbs up, thumbs down? Where are we on this?
I'll go thumbs up.
I give it a thumbs up. It seems to give everybody a shot. You know, if you can do well in the pool play and jump into the round of 16. I guess what I'm not clear on, and I don't know if they've really announced anything that happens after, I think I heard him say, we hope that by the time this tournament is over, the teams can get back to their home stadiums. And I don't know if they would try to do a schedule from there, or this would just be the league championship and you would call it a season. Because, you know, this season would usually last into November.
Right.
Right? That's usually when you crown the MLS champion. So I don't know what happens at that point. Maybe they just assess at that time. But I think they didn't want to keep the players away from their families. I mean, this would be a maximum of what, about 6-8 weeks, something like that. June, you arrive in Florida June 24th.
Yeah.
It's over August 11th.
Semifinals August 5th to August 11th. What is that? That's a month and a half, mm-hmm. I guess,
yep,
roughly.
Thereabouts.
Away from your families. I don't know, because I know the protocols are going to be very important, but I guess after that they'll figure out where to go from there. But this is something that I think will be exciting to follow, because even if you're not, you know, a huge soccer fan, just like I got caught up in the World Cup, you know, when you follow a tournament, you got a team that you're rooting for, it's exciting. So let's hope they can do well in the group stage. And it's weird, they're going over to the Eastern Conference to balance the two conferences for this. So they're going to play some teams from the East, and we'll see how they do.
So that'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But it is pretty cool to see that we were talking about possibly lockout and how bad that would be for the sport, and here they are. And as of June 24th, in 2 weeks, all these 26 teams will be heading down to Florida to get prepared for the group stage, which will begin on July 8th. We're going to have Rick Byrd join us in about 5 minutes or so, and it's always good to catch up with Rick Byrd, and we'll find out the latest and how retirement has been for Rick Byrd. It's got to be strange going through the last year, because he's been, you know, he's known kind of the same schedule, same routine for a long, long time. And to have this last year off, and I know he did a lot of traveling, we talked about that on the show, but what it's been like just kind of sitting and observing and watching, and was it easy? Was it tough to do? I always wonder that. With you know, it's one thing for athletes, because especially athletes in their prime, right? Like when Conor McGregor's like, I'm retired. Yeah, whatever, man. You're not retiring. Stop yeah. it. But when you've done something for a very, very long time and you're a Hall of Famer, as we found out yesterday, what was it? Now he's a 5-time Hall of Famer,
yeah.
Rick Byrd. You know, you've accomplished everything. Obviously, he didn't They won an NCAA tournament game his last year. So I do wonder what his mindset is, but what a career Rick Byrd had at Belmont.
Yeah, it'll be good to catch up with him and talk about the Hall of Fames, the mini Hall of Fames. And I think that's interesting what you bring up of just what it was like. I've watched a few documentaries recently about athletes that have been around for so long, and they kind of had to be pushed to, hey, you probably need to hang it up. It's time. And it just, you know, I don't think that was the situation for him at all. I mean, he went out on top, and I think that's so hard for coaches or athletes to know when it's time and then what it's like afterwards. So it'll be good to catch up with him. Also, I don't know if you guys just saw, but the SEC has made an announcement of virtual media days this summer.
No way. What?
Who saw that coming?
Are you serious?
Uh-huh.
It's not going to be a live gathering?
It's not.
Man, that's too bad. I thought everybody was definitely planning on that. Do we have a little NASCAR tonight?
We do, Martinsville. First time under the lights at Martinsville, or scheduled under the lights, I guess. But they just put those up a few years ago. So that'll be fun, a 500-lapper at the Martinsville Speedway, a little midweek racing. So looking forward to that coming
up. Is
this
FS1?
Yes, FS1.
Also, in the rundown, you guys had Nick Bonino on, and his show will Skates and Plates will debut today at 3 in the afternoon on, what is it, NBC Sports Network and Sportsnet?
Yep, NBC Sports Network. So that'll be cool to check that out. It was good to catch up with Nick Bonino, and because as you guys know, I mean, he's one of those that is always very thoughtful and honest with his opinions, and so it was good to catch up with him. But he's also a cook, and so that's going to be fun to watch him with that hobby. He said he's been doing a lot of cooking during this downtime, so because he's on the road so much that he's helping out more at home since he's there, and he's taking care of the cooking. So it'll be cool to watch that later on today.
Very good.
I loved that conversation. That was really good stuff.
Yeah,
we'll hear a little bit of that later in the show for sure, and talk about there was some interesting things that came out of that interview. But on the other side, the Hall of Famer, Rick Byrd. We'll talk to him next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's a little bit weird introducing our next guest because typically over the years we'd say, hey, let's head over to the campus of Belmont. Let's bring in their head men's basketball coach, Rick Byrd, on the line. And we're not saying that. It's probably the same for him considering he spent the last year not on the sideline for almost four decades. So that was a first for him. Rick is on the line with us, now OVC Hall of Famer, to go along with his other Hall of Fame, Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame induction. He's a member there, the NAIA Hall of Fame, the Greater Knoxville Hall of Fame, and, of course, Belmont's Hall of Fame. And he is also a nominee for the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. Rick, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic. How weird has it been? Or let me ask you, has quarantine just been like the last year for you?
I've told a lot of people that same thing. It hadn't changed my life. The golf course didn't close, and so every day was the same.
So how was life? You did almost the same thing for almost four decades, and how weird was it to just sit back and observe? And was it easy or was it hard to do?
No, it was easy. I think, you know, I've talked to a lot of people that have retired from their jobs, and everybody feels a little differently about it. But I think when you know you were ready, I enjoyed it. I mean, I actually just had breakfast with Lenny Acuff, the coach at Lipscomb, and anybody that's coached gets it. He said, "And I wish I could just go and watch a basketball game and enjoy it, you know." And that's the way I felt for a long time. And this year, I could.
And you were okay with that? It was a different perspective, and you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did enjoy it because I was just ready to quit what I have ended up terming just trying not to win the next game. I mean, it's always you're trying to win the next game when you're a coach. And even if it's in July, the things you're doing are all about the games. And that adds up. And for some people, they love doing it forever. For me, it was just time. Now, you know, I missed – it's the first time in over 40 years I wasn't on a team. I missed that. I missed the players. I missed the coaching staff. I missed the athletic staff at Belmont. There's things that you've done forever, and all of a sudden you're not doing them. But I didn't miss the stress of trying to win the next game.
How did you go about? Let's start early in your career, and as you shaped, you know, your style, how you were going to approach the game as a coach, how you were going to approach your team as a coach, how you were going to treat players, everything that comes, everything that's involved with being a head coach. How did that develop over the years to where, you know, at the end, I mean, you've built Belmont into this that, you know, everybody's accustomed to them winning, them accustomed to them always being in a certain spot or certain position every year to punch their ticket in the NCAA tournament. But how was that process for you to shape and mold yourself as a head coach?
I think to begin with that a lot of it's your own personality and whatever skill set you've been given, how you grew up, who your influencers were. And so I think for the most part, how you treat people, how you go about trying to lead. I think a lot of that's instinctive, but there's no question in anybody in any job, and talking to you, you could answer the same question. And you just, if you don't learn as you move along, if you don't, you don't try to learn. You don't. It's trial and error. I mean, one of the things that, again, after 2 hours of coaching conversation with Lenny this morning, so I'm glad I didn't know what I didn't know when I coached my first game. You know, you think you do. You think you know. And there's just so much that changes. Players change. The game changed a lot. But it was so incremental. You know, it was just daily that you just adapt and move on and try to make yourself better. I think the older you get as a coach, that hopefully you're not quite as wound up. You're not, at least for me, I hope I didn't. There were times when I probably blamed the players, got on the players too hard, when the truth is I just wasn't doing the job I needed to be doing. Hopefully I got better at that.
How did you go about trying to the delicate balance of pushing buttons, cracking the whip, yet being there for them, having an honest conversation or an honest and personal relationship? How did you go – all those dynamics involved with being a head coach. How did you go about trying to maneuver through that?
I think that starts in the recruiting process, and one of the best things that I like to hear from players and parents was either while they were still at school or after they got through, that playing basketball at Belmont was what our basketball staff presented it to be. And so I think I became unafraid to tell players, good players we really wanted, that what our standards were, how we operated, what we would expect from them. And then when they came, there were no surprises. Our personalities didn't change as coaches. Not to say that I didn't get a little angry every now and then, but I got better at it. And so I think they feel like they were treated honestly and fairly and genuinely. And I think if you can do that in anything, that's where you start. And the rest of it still becomes pretty instinctive. You know, you talked about pushing buttons when you should get on them a little bit, or when maybe you just need to back away and you just played a bad game and you say, hey, guys, we're going to take the next 2 days off. Sounds crazy, but sometimes that's the best thing to do.
Hmm. Rick Bird on the line with us. You won 805 career games, and that game against Temple in the NCAA tournament, the play-in game in Dayton, it doesn't change your resume. Yes, it added a victory, but it didn't change your resume. All those Hall of Fames that I said, that wasn't changing the narrative for you, but it was special, and you know that. That was the goal. You'd been there so many times. You'd been close, and you hadn't been able to knock down that door. What did I know it's about the kids, but since we're having you on and we're talking about you, what did it truly mean to you, Rick, to actually knock down that door and win that NCAA tournament game?
Now that's you're making it tough on me now because I just it is about a whole lot of things. Everybody has their own life and everybody has their own hopes and dreams and goals. Let me just put it this way: Tom Watson got close a lot of times before he won a major golf tournament, for example. And everybody, either as a player or a coach, it's rare when you just jump in there and you can do it right off the bat. But when you've been seven times that we had gone. And sure, we were a 15 seed or a 13 seed, and we were playing a top 15 team, and that was going to be unlikely every time we played. But it still becomes the thing that people talk about. So, and it becomes the thing that you'd like to do more than anything else. And so probably the last 7, 8, 10 years of my career, that would sort of be the thing, the question that would come, how much would that mean if you won it? And the more people ask you, the more important it becomes. So it was great on every level. And if you make me say it's great on a personal level, I'd say it certainly was.
Well, before I flip it to Willie, Coach, it's because of the body. It goes back to what I said at the beginning. Those questions were being asked because of the body of work and the culture that you had created there. That's why they were getting asked because, like I said, everybody just – was accustomed to you being in that spot every year.
Yeah, that's a fair point, and I think we do that to athletes too often, or coaches too often, that get there and can't get it done. And that doesn't mean we won seven conference championships, final games out of eight, and then all of a sudden, the last 4 years I coached, we didn't win the conference tournament any of those years. And the last two, we lost to Murray in the final game. And nothing was different about the way I approached it. I guess the numbers just finally caught up with me a little bit. But you do get – it's unfair, and it's unfair to people that have been really excellent in their field to say they can't win the big one, I think. I think the overall body of work and the words you used – is how somebody should be judged. And if they fall a little short and never win a major golf tournament or tennis tournament or NBA championship or NCAA championship, doesn't mean they weren't really good at what they did.
I do think that part of it can be underappreciated. We're talking to former Belmont coach Rick Bird, just named to the OVC Hall of Fame, the latest of these great accolades he's been getting, deservedly so. So, Coach, since it's the OVC, I can remember being at the press conference when you guys announced that you were leaving the Atlantic Sun and going to the OVC, which was, I would imagine, it would have been a pretty difficult decision to make on some levels, particularly as it pertained to your team. You know, you guys had had success in that league. Your arch rival was in there, so you had to decide whether to keep that, what the benefits were from going over to the OVC. So, Take me back to that time. What was the key part of the equation for you guys to realize that the OVC was the right move for you?
Well, Willie, first of all, that is so much of an institutional decision. I mean, certainly an athletic one, but it's a presidential level, athletic director level, whoever the president wants to involve, the athletic board, in weighing the pros and cons. I think, so from my perspective, what was really good about it for us was that all of a sudden we're playing people twice a year, once in Curb Event Center, that that college basketball fans in Nashville had grown up hearing about and knowing about Tennessee State, Tennessee Tech, Austin Peay, certainly Murray State's success. And they're just the only one in the Atlantic Sun that fit that bill was obviously Lipscomb. So I think our crowds grew. I think interest in the program grew. Media would be more interested in Belmont against Austin Peay, the Nashville media, than they would Belmont against North Florida. That was the good part. I think the question mark, the biggest one, was all of a sudden we're the only private school in this conference. There's a lot of things different about private and public in terms sometimes of resources. Cost of a scholarship that Belmont had to pay was a lot more than what the state schools in the OVC were. And in the Atlantic Sun, there was quite a few, Lipscomb, Mercer, Stetson, others over the years. Sanford used to be in the league, Campbell, those schools, Gardner-Webb. A lot of schools like Belmont in that league. But again, overall, I think it was a terrific move for us. And we were fortunate to jump right in and be competitive.
Well, that's for sure. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, if you're strictly thinking which league is easier to win, I think I probably would have said that the OVC would be a little tougher to win. That generally speaking, you start with Murray State, you go on down the line. Austin Peay has had a lot of, you know, consistent success. That would have been a tricky part of the equation for sure. But you guys, to your credit, that's probably has to be something you're pretty proud of, as you jumped in there. And that, you know, I because generally speaking, I think it's safe to say the OVC ranks ahead of the Atlantic Sun from top to bottom most years, but you guys jump right in there and for the most part have been consistent contenders.
Well, Willie, I think we would all say if we're competitive that one of the things that you like when people say, and I heard several comments, it's going to be a whole lot tougher to win in the OVC than it was the Atlantic Sun, and it makes it just a little bit nicer when you're able to do it. But to be fair to the Atlantic Sun, whatever metric you want to choose, whether it's the net ratings or the RPI or Sagarin or Ken Pomeroy's numbers, over the last 10, 15 years even, the teams have flip-flopped some. And I would agree the perception is the OVC, and maybe is a little bit over that period of time, but certainly some years it would surprise folks to see that the Atlantic Sun came out ahead in the overall ranking. Maybe because they've got fewer schools now, and the OVC's had, you know, three or four that were in the, you know, the 300s, and that hurts the league overall. The top tier, tougher to get through. The top four in the OVC, I think, has been stronger overall.
Chase, go ahead.
We're talking to Rick Byrd, a multi-time Hall of Famer and former Belmont basketball coach. So, you know, listening to you to talk with Darren and Willie over all of this and, you know, the kids and the people that you've coached, obviously Casey Alexander is somebody you have a great relationship with. So what was it like to kind of step back and let him do his thing, but also be that proud mentor and former coach?
Well, first off, Casey has been terrific. And Belmont, the athletic staff, the administration, has been terrific to keep me involved and make me feel comfortable and welcome there. Casey's gone out of his way, and I appreciate that. It's a wonderful relationship between a coach and a player that you loved having on your team because of how competitive and what a leader Casey was. So it was pretty easy, even though we've all got egos and we could all say, you know, maybe Belmont ought to drop off a little bit so I can show everybody how good a coach I was. That's kind of a natural human reaction. In this case, it was easy not to be that way.
You've probably over the years heard the phrase, you know, it's hard to be the guy to follow the guy. But why was Casey, in your opinion, just from some of the things you just said, the perfect guy to follow you?
Well, there's just so many things fall into place. The fact that he was a really good, and maybe the best word is important, player for us when he was in school there, and then a longtime assistant who really should get more credit for our climb through Division One than he gets, and I mean that really about the whole staff as well. But he was a guy that was pushing me to go from being a small college coach to a Division One head coach, and the things that you have to do in recruiting and in strength and conditioning and some things that I'd rather be playing golf than doing. So he had a lot to do with that. And then he goes out and gets a job at Stetson and does a nice job for 2 years and then takes the Lipscomb program and takes it to heights that considerable. I mean, and so I didn't make the decision, but that made it easy. When he goes to the finals, the NIT, and goes to the NCAA the year before that, all you got to do is watch his teams play to prove what kind of basketball coach he is. And then they're hiring a guy that they know is a quality human being.
Yeah, very well said. Absolutely. Did you at any point during all of this going on with the coronavirus and, you know, sports just stopping, did you ever stop and think how you would have handled it if you had been in that situation as the head coach?
Yeah, what I've been thinking lately is, you know, if I'd have kept coaching for a while, I could be playing golf every day like I am right now and getting paid for it.
Yeah, collecting checks.
And so, you know, I'm a little disappointed that I made a premature decision. I don't know. I was old school, and I was one that pretty much believed that our student athletes should have an opportunity to be regular students. And so our out-of-season stuff was not nearly as consistent as it's become these days. Now, I wouldn't have liked all this. I wouldn't like them being away from campus, all that kind of stuff. Heck, I would even miss basketball camps. But it probably wouldn't hurt our program as much as it might others who think they need to be practicing every day, an hour they're allowed to.
Coach, have you got time for one more quick one here? And this,
sure.
this may be unfair because it may not, it requires a little thought, because I think we've all been thinking, especially as sports fans, right? We're sitting here, we have no games to cover on a daily basis, but there's been so much great discussion that has come in the last few weeks about really a role of a coach, right? A lot of coaches are looking at themselves, they're having very important conversations with their players. And so what are your thoughts when that comes to mind for you? So the important conversations you have with your players that don't involve, you know, the game of basketball, that, you know, you're trying to develop people to be successful. You're trying to maybe open up their minds a little bit. What are your thoughts as we go through this time of the role of a coach?
Well, Willie, I have, at least the longer I coached, the more I considered myself simply part of our student athletes' overall education, and we really are educators, and the things we say and do on a daily basis is really important. I know that Casey has done a really good job. I couldn't have told you what Zoom was 3 months ago, okay? But I know he's done a terrific job of staying in touch with his team, both all together and individually, and not missing out on those moments when you can continue to be a big part of their lives. So I think a lot of coaches have done that during this time. But I also think it's, in many cases, one of the weakest things about our profession right now. So much pressure to win games that we forget we're really a part, just simply a part of a big one. But we shape those 15 kids on our teams and the student assistants, and we shape a lot of their lives, and we don't even realize we're doing it. So we better do it right.
Let's end on a light note real quick as we wrap up. So your dream foursome on the golf course, who would your other three be? What would be your dream foursome?
Wow. I mean, Are you talking about like great professional golfers or friends?
I'm saying Rick Bird gets to choose three people.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say local people because when you start doing this, you're excluding a whole lot more than you're including. So I think I'd play with – this is such hypothetical. I'm going to say I'm a fan of Rory McIlroy. I'm a fan of Jordan Spieth. Let's put those in there.
Okay.
Since it's so hypothetical, let's bring Bobby Jones back and put him in there, okay?
Okay. All right. Mm. I love it. That's what I wanted. You won't keep playing golf. I know you won't get to play with him, but keep playing golf. Thanks for doing this, as always.
None of those guys, by the way, would have wanted me as their partner.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know them, but we'll just go on that assumption. But congrats on getting into the OVC Hall of Fame.
I appreciate it.
All right, that is Rick Bird, legendary Belmont coach, 33 years on the sidelines as the Bruins head coach. We will come back and wrap up the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We appreciate Rick Bird for joining us. Good way to start off the show today on this Wednesday. Hey, a lot of local businesses in Middle Tennessee are now open and ready to serve you during these times. You can help them out by visiting rocknashville.com. Once again, that's rocknashville.com for delivery/pickup options, also fitness ideas, virtual entertainment, and so much more. We got this, Nashville. Support your local businesses. Always a good message, especially in these times. So we will have Gary Smith, Nashville SC head coach, start the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase. The MLBPA has proposed now an 89-game season and expanded playoffs, according to Jeff Passan and his sources. What do you guys make of that? In the latest, as MLB turns.
That's what I think.
Say that again? One more time?
That's how I feel about it.
Glad we're not sharing mics.
I know. Yeah, I'm going to have to hose this one off.
So you're talking about this, the proposal that the players put together?
Yes.
The MLBPA, yes.
Just let me know when there's a deal.
Well, but why waste our time with that? I mean, you know.
Moving on.
89. The 89-game season with the prorated salaries, that was dead on arrival. That had zero chance. 0.0.
What?
Neither time.
What are they doing?
Neither side has made any sacrifice off their original point. All they're doing is changing the numbers around. Spreading them to 89, 114, 48 games, 50. It's just ridiculous. It's so ridiculous.
If they were actually sitting in a room together, I feel like they would just be sliding a piece of paper back and forth, back and forth. You take it. No, you take it. No, you take it. No, you take it. It's silly. I mean, I don't know. I just shake my head. I don't know where this is going. Or if it's going.
Total waste of time. They're going to play a 50-game season. That's what it looks like. That's the dead end that they will agree on. Because that's where the numbers end up evening out. For the quote, prorated salaries that the players are entrenched in getting.
That's the thing.
The prorated number that they're
nuts.
Looking for, you could play 50 games. Which is it's so sad.
Well, and the vine they're dying
on. Give up that exclusive window.
The vine they're dying on is we've already we agreed in March that we were going to take a pay cut, and I just don't think it's fair for – a lot's changed since March. Like, come on. I mean, we're now 3 months or whatever it is working from home. I can't figure out what day it is half the time. You have people drawing unemployment because they've lost their jobs and businesses have closed. And you are going to sit there going, well, we already took our pay cut back in March. Like, come on. Give me a break. So, yeah, I that's where I'm, you know, Ryan went off this morning on the rundown. And it was very spot on because it's like, I'm sick of this. You know, MLS has dates. The NHL, I'm hoping, is close to having dates. The NBA has dates. NASCAR's been back. UFC has an
By the way, NASCAR's letting fans in the stands.
NASCAR's letting
coming to Talladega.
Yeah, they're letting military people in at Miami this weekend, about 1,000, and then 5,000 guests or fans
at Talladega.
Yeah. Yeah, and yet the MLB and the players just are sitting there throwing pieces of paper at each other. Here's my proposal. Oh, yeah, we're not going to accept it. Screw you. I mean, that's just – it's ridiculous, and now it's just at the point where it's almost comical every day when Jeff Passan – I feel bad for guys like that that keep getting this information and having to report it. And he tweeted yesterday, like, just play already. Just come back. Like, just figure this out.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing when you see people like Jeff Passan that are so involved in this, and they're at their wits' end. They're just like, you know what? Like, you could see him. Like, if he could shake his head constantly, you just could see Jeff Passan shaking his head as he's reporting. I mean, that's what it looks and feels like right now. Every time ESPN trots him out there to tell this silly, you know, new bargaining tool that the other side has come up with, that everybody knows the minute you hear it, they go, oh, yeah, sure. Like, that's going to happen. Yeah. Right back to square one, huh? It's you can even tell it in his reporting. And he's very good at what he does. You can tell he's over it. That's when you know you've got huge problems. And here's what I was thinking about. So Willie was gone. And if you remember, Chase, I said on this show, I spoke to somebody who works with a Major League Baseball team, has good inside information, talks to a lot of important people. And I told you I had a long conversation with him after one of our shows last week. And if you remember, I said he feels right now that he is like his arms up of, I have no idea. He said, I guess they'll probably come to their senses, but I don't know. And he said, probably when they do, it's going to be about a 62-game season. Do you remember me saying that last week?
Yep.
So
since then,
50
both,
or 60
teams,
games.
Yeah. Well, since then, Darren, both sides have given a, quote, proposal. But other than some really small maneuvering of the numbers, there hasn't been any legitimate compromise gesture by either side. The players kind of laughed at the owner's first one, where they were basically saying, okay, instead of offering us a half a dozen, what's the saying? Six in one, half a dozen in the other. Instead of offering us six, you've offered us half a dozen, right? It's the same proposal worded differently is how it was interpreted. And this one is going to be viewed the same way by the owners, this throwback by the players. There's no compromise by either side. They both have stayed completely entrenched on the key point, and that is the overall dollar. So what's going to happen is, like you said, it's going to be somewhere between 48, now 54 is in an article that Ken Rosenthal has from The Athletic. You threw out 62, Darren. It's going to be in that neighborhood, I think. They'd be better off just saying that's what we've agreed on and that's what we're going to, rather than this farce of back and forth where really you could have a huge benefit. Even if you started July 10th instead of July 4th, you'd still have 3 weeks before everybody else gets started to have some exclusive windows to get your season started, get people excited about baseball, and have people watching games that maybe don't watch a whole lot of baseball and maybe keep their interest when everybody else starts playing in August. But they've gone so short-sighted on this, it's just a shame.
I think that was probably on Thursday's show when I said that. So let's just go with 54... 62, whatever the number is, because it's going to all apply to what I'm about to say. Let's say, for the sake of this discussion, 54. You said the latest one you saw was 54. Okay, that's 33% of your regular season. Has there ever been a champ crowned in any sport where they played 33% of their regular season? We all know the Blackhawks won it coming off, a half of a season. So they played 50% of their regular season. Has anybody ever won it playing less than 50% of their scheduled regular season?
I'm pretty sure the answer is no.
That's why I'm bringing it up, because I feel that way.
The played a season in 1982 where they played 9 regular season games because of the strike.
But back then they only played, 14?
16. No, that was the,
Did they play 16?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they, but that's still over half. Baseball had a season in 81 where it was split, right? So they played roughly 110 games. But remember what they did was they split the season. So if you were in first place on the day of the strike, you were guaranteed to be in the playoffs. And then the second half was only about, you know, probably what this will be, somewhere around 50, 55 games. And if you won that second half, you were in the playoffs. And there were teams that had the best record in their division, the Reds and the Cardinals. The Reds had the best record in baseball, but they didn't win either half, so they didn't even get the chance to play in the playoffs. So that was messed up, but it was still over half of the games. So this would be by far the shortest, I think, that I can think of.
That's what I that's the reason I was bringing it up. I don't think anybody...
I think it was 48 games in 2013 when the league locked out the hockey players, and they came to an agreement somewhere in January. They played over half.
Well, I know it was at least half or more. I could not think of anything off the top of my head of ever anybody playing less than half of a normally scheduled regular season.
Yeah,
I didn't say it didn't happen. I'm saying I couldn't think of any. So this would be unprecedented. This would be a first, correct? If this actually happened. Whether it's 48, 54, 62 games that I threw out there is still 38% of your regular season.
Yeah. And if that's all you could play, then that's understandable. But they're missing out on the chance to play closer to a half or a little over half. If they had gotten off their rear ends earlier and really done some partnership type of talks and not these adversarial talks that just, you know, basically waits out the clock until the commissioner has to come down and say, okay, I can't wait any longer. Here's the season. It's 50-something games. Go play. That's what we're on our way to. I mean, they're going to play.
Which is only going to hurt
them. But it's just going to be really sad how much that they have given away their opportunity to really be an inspiring kind of thing. And we need inspiring things right now. We need
sports. Would you truly feel good about the winner, though, no matter what? If they played 38, 33%, would you really still treat them? Will the public treat them as the true champs?
Well, think – but – ask it that way.
We'll always know what happened in 2020. I think we'll always know that, but it's better than nothing.
Well, but that's not the question. That's not the question. Is this better than nothing? The question is, will the general public, if it's the, I don't know, let's come up with not anything crazy, but if it was the Minnesota Twins that won it all,
okay,
and they played 33% of the regular season, would everybody be like, remember that 2020 Minnesota Twins team? They won it all. Would we actually reference them, or would it be like, you remember why the Twins won, right? They played 54 games that year in the regular season.
I think would certainly
right,
do
but
that.
But I think they're talking about an expanded playoff where maybe you have as many as 16 teams. I mean, you would have to win a fair amount of rounds. It'll just be different. I think we'll just all know when, if you're a baseball historian, you know, if we're lucky enough to be around in 20 years, we'll look back and say, yeah, that was the year that the virus hit and they did all that stuff. I mean,
I'm saying they've botched this so bad that I think it's going to screw over whoever wins it now, because there's just going to be a portion of people and fans, media, fans, whatever, be like, they won.
Yeah, well, there's going to be a 30 for 30 on McGuire and Sosa, the summer of 98. And so that's a big yeah, but.
But that's kind of universally recognized, right? It's like Barry Bonds' home run record. Like, I feel like everybody's
that's
on that page of
yeah, but.
I don't even think you're asking the most important part of this question. What if it's your team? How are you going to feel? What if it were the Indians or the Braves?
I'm
going to
root for them.
Yeah, but are you still going to feel
all the way? I hope they win, and I'll celebrate if they win, for sure.
You will celebrate.
But you're going to feel good about it.
Will it feel good?
It's going to be different. Of course,
I'll
be. Absolutely, it'll feel good.
It'll feel the same. Will it feel the same?
The same, I don't know, but it'll feel good. It'll feel really good. I'll get. You know, it's what's in front of you as a competitor.
I didn't say it would be depressing, Willie. I'm asking you, will it feel complete? Will it feel like it should feel?
No, it won't feel complete.
Exactly. That's what kind of what I'm getting at.
Because my team is my
you
team is one of those
complete
that...
me. Do we need to play the Jerry Maguire clip?
Yes. Because my team,
you had me at 54 games.
Like my team is one of those that I think I felt good going into this season. I mean, the moves they made.
Show me the expanded playoffs.
But I would definitely
you
feel different.
You had me at wild card four. You had me at wild card four. We got in because we were the fourth wild card, and we won.
Blame it on Willie, Chase, because he brought up Jerry Maguire, and blame it on him that you can't finish.
Yeah.
I know. If the Braves won it all, I mean, sure, I'd be like, hey, World Series champs, but yeah, but
you wouldn't feel the same, would you?
I would not. No.
Think about you haven't. The thing about me, 1948.
Yeah. Oh,
1948.
Yeah. You know,
and
would
I be excited? Yes, but would it feel the same as I would have felt in 2017, 1997, or 1995? I think it would be impossible to feel the same way. Impossible, right?
Yeah, I would want
Bob Costas actually said as much on a podcast with Jason Stark. He was asked that very question specifically about the Indians. He said, "I almost hope they don't win it." You know, for that reason, because after all those years, that's the year you win it. It's you know, you laid it out. I think it's natural that you would have that thought.
Yeah, I would then be more, okay, great, they won it this year. I need them to go do it again next year because then I'll feel better about it. It's like it's now it's almost, and I would imagine the players feel that way too, if I'm being honest.
Just think about what you just said. Yeah, that's great. They won. That's awesome. I feel great. But now you got to win it next year. See, that's what I'm getting at.
For
like, they've botched this
more.
So much. That is going to be the mentality, and shame on them. Shame on them that that's what they're going to force us to feel. That's the way we're going to feel, and that's the problem. That's how bad this is. The Indians, since 1948, if they win it, I'll be like, that's awesome. I'll be pumped, but I'll be like, I'll always go, yeah, but they did it in a 54-game regular season.
See, I didn't even think about it.
Especially
that way.
When they had the opportunity to get to 80 or 90 or 100 games.
That's
you know,
what
that's,
I'm getting
that's
at.
That's what's really going to be a shame. Because even that would have been, well, it's not quite the same, but at least
you'd
they're
feel
doing
a little
what
better.
They could. Here, 54 when you could have played 94, you know.
If it's 50 or more, we don't – I'm telling you, it's different because we don't do that in hockey. And we don't do it for some of the other seasons or other sports that have come close. They're hovering around 50, 55, 60% of their season. We don't do that to them either. To me, like that's the marker. Like you had to – they had to get to 81 or more to not have those feelings. In my mind, this is just my opinion, I feel like anything 81 or below, we're going to have those feelings, and damn them for doing that, because now it's going to cheapen for whoever wins, because a big portion of people are going to be, that's great, but, and so thanks baseball.
But hey, you know, Scott Boras and the players, they can say, we got our prorated salaries. Great.
Scott Boras.
You love to work Scott Boras in every day.
Well, he's pushing the
I would love to see Willie.
I know.
I would love to see Willie meet Scott Boras. I don't know if you've ever met Scott Boras, but I would love to witness
that.
I sat in a suite right next to Scott Boras, and he was in the suite, Danny Evans' suite, at an Angels home game.
Did you talk to him?
Nope. I didn't talk to him. Nope. He didn't look like the approachable type.
Yeah.
All right, we'll come back. Nashville SC head coach Gary Smith on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.